inspiring conversations for the modern man. The Evolving Man Podcast.
All right, welcome everybody to the podcast, Mr. Ashanti Branch.
Hello, glad to be here. Hello there.
Thank you for joining me, Ashanti. For me, it feels like this is a long time coming, actually. I think you probably meet a lot of people who have seen you out there. They met you before you met them, so to speak. The first time I saw you was in a film called The Mask You Live In. Yeah, and this was one of the first movies that showed the issues that boys face, and boys' work, men's work, that whole realm of things. That was kind of like my intro, and it was, if I recall properly, it was like 7 or 8 years ago that I saw that right near the beginning when it was doing the tour, right?
Yeah, 2015.
Uh-huh. And you played a very prominent part in this film. They covered a number of young boys who had a single father and a couple other kids. But they showed you sitting with a group of teenagers, a circle of teenagers, in a sort of safe space where you're encouraging these guys to share. These guys are in junior high or high school, and you're doing the type of work with them that I did when I was in rehab, when I was 16. And so it really hit home. I was like, oh, boys, young men sitting in a circle together, like talking about stuff that's uncomfortable. And the way that you worked with them, the way that you talked with them, where you really gave them a lot of respect, it struck me. And I was like, oh, this guy is like a perfect leader for young men. Perfect leader for young men. These guys trust him. They respect him. They're opening up, and you're using tools like a mask that you paint, or that you write, here's what I show everybody on the outside and here's what's on the inside, and you're having guys share that. And it's a powerful moment. It's a powerful thing to see. And I think everybody who watched that, thought to themselves, we need this in every school, So at first, I just want to say thank you, man. Thank you for the work that you're doing for young men. And it's great to meet you.
You too. Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm glad. It's always really good to hear people's experience with that scene, right? Because what I try and explain to people was that they were going to come to that class where I was at, that school I was at, Fremont High School, Oakland, California. I'm an alumni from that school. I graduated from there. So these young men, they never opened up. And I'm like, well, look, you should probably go to one of our clubs over that's doing really good, right? Because in that club, those young men, they opened up and they were like, well, we want to see where you are. I said, well, the young men I'm working with, they're resisting, right? And they were like, well, we'll just record the resistance. I'm like, all right, I'm glad you want to see resistance because I got plenty of it. Mm-hmm. And every time we do check-ins, we do a check-in every, circle up. Everybody's a 9 or a 10. Most people are a 10. 10, 10, 10, maybe 1-9 over there. Everybody's a 10. Now, I'm the dean that year, right? So all referrals, all suspensions, all issues come through my office. You're not a 10. You're not a 10.
You got kicked lying.
You got kicked out of 5 classes today. Yeah. That's not 10 behavior. Unless your goal is to see how many classes you can get kicked out of, then you're doing almost perfect, right? You only got 6 classes. And I realized that in front of each other, they had a show. Like, I'm good. Everything's fine. Now, when we're in my office one-on-one, I'm not asking softball questions. I'm asking, like, why are you here again? Like, why do you want negative attention? I would give you all kind of positive attention. Like, I ask hard questions because I think I'm trying to learn something. Mm-hmm. And man, I learned from those young men. Like in the office 101, we can go. They can break down. I'm gonna close the windows. I'm like, okay, let's go. Let it out. Like, this is the place to let it out. You're in a safe place to let it out. But when they got in front of each other in the circle, everybody's too cool. Nobody feels nothing. And in a circle, I can't tell their business. My job is to hold space, so I'm holding space for everybody. And I'm just watching them lie and lie and lie, and I'm just like, goodness, what are we going to do? And I tried so many things. And when they told me they wanted to come film, I was like, I don't know what we're going to do, but I'm not making no headway here. And they were like, well, we'll just capture what we can capture. And I'm like, all right. And in my mind, I'm like, okay. I heard that out loud, but in my mind, I'm like, you can't come here and just watch young men saying, I'm doing great, nothing's wrong, everything's fine. Because I know it's a lie, but ultimately, what does that do for anybody learning from this situation? And I was like, let me try something else. Let me try this activity. What if they don't have to talk about it? What if they don't have to talk about it? What if they just write it? Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking like how I was going to do the, you know, how I was going to collect. I was trying to figure all that out. And when I figured out, I'm going to just have them throw it, you know, teenagers, give them permission to hit each other with paper. You give them permission. Mm-hmm. That is like a win, right?
So, yeah.
All right. And that's how we did that activity. And literally, I didn't know it was going to work. Out of my chair, I had like two other activities I was going to try. Because if that thing didn't work, I was going to try something else. So I don't even know what the other two activities were at the, you know. But I remember like, if this doesn't work, I better find something else, right? Because, man, I was scared. And then when those masks came around, they started throwing them. They picked up one, and they opened it, and I just felt the room just like go silent, like absolutely. And I was just like, wow. And I literally was all I'm doing in that moment when I'm every time I watch it, I'm like, I'm just like coming from the top of my head, from my heart to my head to my mouth. Like, okay, what can I say? What am I don't even know what's happening because I've never seen this before. Like, I'm in shock in the moment. Wow. And I'm just with them. And I'm like, I'm trying to ask questions. I'm like, why don't we talk about it? Why don't we hide it? And when that young man said, you got to keep your poker face on. You can't let people know what you got. I'm like, oh, you're so right. Like, I was there. I was in those seats. I was in this building, probably the same paint job. I was in here 20 years ago. Acting the same way. Mm-hmm. Good. Everything's fine. And yeah. It was not fine. And so it was a full circle for my own self, but also for the work, right? Because, you know, I never planned to be in education. When I was walking those halls, I was trying to get out of Oakland so I could be rich, you know?
Yeah. So I love that story. I love hearing your perspective of what that was like in that moment because as a viewer, what I was watching was a guy who, like, you know, was doing an activity that he knew so well and had done 100 times and knew what was going to happen with the young guys. But what I'm hearing from you is like, you're just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks. And that you were, in a sense, like you leveled up your group work, your ability to work with young men in a group in that moment. Like what we were witnessing was you leveling up and them leveling up and you finding a new tool. And these guys opened up.
Yeah. It was me, like almost like you imagine like I'm from this school. So when I talk to students about this school, I'm like, this is my school. It was my school before it was your school. You know what I'm saying? Like I get real with them. What you saw me doing was in the moment of like in the moment of freak out, you have a choice. You either freeze, flight, fight, or you like, and I was like, I am here to fight with you. Like, I'm not here to fight against you. I'm here to fight with you.
Yeah.
To know that whatever you tell me, that I got you. That it's not going to stun me. It's not going to make me run away from you. It's not going to make me think less of you. Like, I'm going to fight with you to break the break down the mask that keeps getting in your way of being who you could be, who you want to be, because you've been told stories that are not accurate, true, or even meaningful for you, you know? Mm-hmm. And what you saw in that scene was, you remember, I handed them a mask. Like, I'm literally trying something new. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm hoping this thing works. I'm hoping, okay, I give them a mask. They write some words. And the evolution from there to where we are now, where we've collected, you know, over 50,000 masks from, like, more than 25 countries, right? What I've seen now, and the way the mask looks right now, I'm gonna show you one. Because I have... There's a pile of them here under my desk. There's a pile of them here. But this is one that really stands out to me the most, and I reference this a lot, but it's... I'm going to let you see this one, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So this is a picture of a mask, and if you look at the words on the outside, you see happy, smart. Oh, you can read them.
Outgoing, caring.
Yeah, that's the outside. Now the word from the back is bleeding through because, like, but I'm going to let you see what's on the back. You probably already saw it. I don't know if you could tell what he wrote.
Anger, 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 anger. So much anger.
18 times. 18 times. And when I first saw this, you see it's wrinkled up. It's wrinkled because we balled it up. This was the first big, huge workshop I did where I had a snowball fight. There was about 300 boys in a gymnasium throwing pieces of paper at each other. It was, I almost thought it was out of control. But
man,
this is the one when I got home and I flattened them all out and I saw this one and I'm like, my heart just broke. Mm-hmm. Like, man, what are we doing with people who are carrying around so much stuff and they don't get to talk about it? We're not talking about it.
Yeah.
And so what happens is it's coming out somewhere. All that anger on that paper, that you only had to write three words. Imagine you wrote 18 times anger.
Yeah.
That is a demonstration for your own self, not for me, but for your own self, that there's more in there. And when do we give people a chance to take it off? When do we give people a chance to like process it? If we're told communities that we live in, man, don't show no feelings. Mm-hmm. Anger is respected. But if you're at some fancy school and you're dealing with a bunch of anger, you better hide it because the teachers are going to get afraid of you. You know, most of the teaching profession are mostly women. 77-78% are women in the education. Mm-hmm. So if you're a young man who is like got big stature, big voice, big presence, and you're showing all this anger,
dangerous.
You're dangerous, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting phenomenon, you know, that we live in a society that it seems to be emotionally illiterate. You know, I'm not surprised that teenagers have a mask, you know, like I'm kind of like, yeah, from what I know about childhood development and how an ego forms, it kind of makes sense that like by the time you're 14, 15, 16, you got an ego and that you got a mask and that you think you got to be a certain way in the world and you're trying stuff on, you know, like teenagers are just trying stuff on all day long. Like, oh, that guy looks cool. Like I'm going to start walking like him. Oh, he's listening to, you know, that music sounds awesome. Like people must respect that. I'm going to like listen to that music and turn that up real, real loud and move to it, you know, like, and you're trying to figure out who you are. And you know, largely in your 20s, you are also still trying to figure out who you are. Like I would argue that we don't even really get close to knowing who we are until we're in our 30s. But I, you know, that seems like a normal process. And I love that here's a emotionally literate man sitting with some young men teaching them that in one way or another. Like, oh, okay, like, what's your outsides like and what's your insides like? And you know, do you give space to that? You know, and who do you share that with? And teaching them that. But the other piece is like, do our parents, do the adults out there have that ability to do what you're doing? And from what I've seen, they generally don't.
And the hard part is that when you're a teacher, you're not required to. You're required to know the subject. You're required to teach a subject. You're hired to be an expert at a certain subject. And what happens? Well, let's say I'm a math teacher, right? So when I'm on math, I love math. Like I'm a math nerd undercover, right? But here's what I am clear about. Most people are not. When I grew up around or not. So I didn't nerd out about math until later. When I became a teacher and I recognized that there was so much more. But what if you didn't know that being that, talking about that, people could handle it? Then you probably just not talk about it.
Uh-huh.
You probably just decide that, you know what? Yep, I'm just gonna keep it to myself. What if you wanna be an artist, but people in your family said, well, artists don't make money, so you can't do that, you gotta go do this. And you at some point in your life know that you have no power and therefore you follow their rules. And then you end up in your life later and you realize, I don't wanna do this. Mm-hmm. I wanna be doing art. But now you have a programming that's been many, many years of programming that says, no, you can't do that because no one's going to make money doing that. And therefore, you do what you think is going to make money and let you live the life you want to live because you're taught that if you don't have the lifestyle, then you don't have a good life.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is it happens over and over again with so many different topics and so many different situations. Like, no one told me I had to be an engineer. I wanted to be an engineer because I heard engineers make good money. You can get rich quick.
Me too.
I'm like, true. Sign me up. And that's how I went to engineering. You're good at math and you want to make a lot of money? You should be an engineer. Okay, how do I do that? They're like, just keep working at math and okay, good, sign me up for all that. And I came becoming an engineer and you realize, this is fun. I'm having a lot of fun. I can do this work. I'm good at it. but it's not the happy ever after I thought I was looking for. It's not the joyous. You know, it's like what am I doing wrong? Like I thought I was working for happy ever after, right? Which they tell you is a dream, right? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until like kind of tapping back in, I started tutoring at this learning center and this program, and the fire just came on. Like this is what you should be doing. But I'm like, wait a minute, teaching. Teachers don't make money. I can't be doing that. So I ran. I was like, I'm out of here. I would have made more money. I was like, but you know what I was really doing? I was funding happy hours. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Like happy was Friday around 5 p.m. I'm like, yeah, let's go. And then Sunday around 7 p.m. it starts to fade away. You're like, I go back. And I think the challenge in this work was that I liked the work. I liked building buildings. I liked engineering. It wasn't that I didn't like it. The challenge was that, you know, I think they say good is the enemy of great, right?
Uh-huh.
Like I could do this work. I'm good at this, but it's not, it doesn't ignite me.
Yeah.
To being like who I like, is it me? I'm just working to go to work all day and then come home and then watch video games and play TV and blah, blah, blah. And then I come back to work. You know, I felt like something was missing. And when I started teaching, it was like, this is the thing that brings me not only joy, but a great sense of purpose, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I think that's how it's been going. This is like ever forward. The program I started my first year teaching is 17 years old this year. It was 17 years ago when I started this program. I didn't know what I was doing. Sometimes I still don't know what I'm doing. I'm running the organization now, and I'm like, what am I doing? I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Like we got a big event this weekend, and I'm like in that mode of like, I think I'm still a lot of learning. And I think they say when the student is ready, the teacher will come, mm-hmm. you know? And I think I'm still learning a lot in this, not only this nonprofit, you know, structure and atmosphere, but also in this work of service, right? Like, mm-hmm. and I think it's really interesting.
Man, amazing story. I got questions. So first of all, do you tell young men that story? Do you tell them about how you followed what people told you that you should do based on what you're good at and how you found your real purpose?
Yeah, I tell them mostly, like, if young men who are in our club, they usually hear part of my story during our first workshop.
Yeah.
And I tell a couple of different stories, or I tell whichever one I feel is they're ready for. Most times when they find out that hey, you were an engineer, I say, I'm still an engineer, by the way. I pay for that degree. I'm going to constantly own that I'm an engineer. I'm a teacher, too, but I'm an engineer who teaches, right?
Yeah.
But ultimately, I really said to them, yeah, my journey took me there because most students who know how students treat teachers, who know how schools are set up, they're like, man, I would never be no teacher. I mean, that's my community. Yeah. I never met a kid in my classes who were like, Mr. Branch, you know what? One day I'm going to be a teacher.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
can not zero came to me and said those words, you know?
Yeah. It's the system. You're a part of the system, man.
You are the man right there. You just try to hold me down. And every time a student said to me, you don't care about us. You're only here for the check. I was like, let me show you one of my checks. I ain't got no pride in this. Let me go get one for you. Here. You see that check? Now, let me show you one of my engineering checks.
Yeah.
Now, go and I'm like, so let's talk about what I'm here for, money or not. Because I'm clearly, absolutely, number proof that not here for this money. Because why would I leave? And they're like, you left all that to be here? I'm like something called me here. I didn't choose this. This chose me, you know? So I do tell them that story when they're ready for it. And it sometimes gets weaved in, you know? Sometimes the nuance of why I became a teacher is not as important. The fact that I'm in this work because I think I was called to this work. That's the piece
that I think is actually one of the really important pieces for young men that... Not a lot of adults give that piece of the story, you know, the lesson behind like, hey, like there's a lot of people that are going to tell you what to do with your life. There's a lot of structures out there. They're going to say like, come get educated here and then get this job. And there's a lot of cool people that you're going to see like, oh yeah, maybe I want to do what that guy does. Yeah. But there's something in here that some, you know, a lot of people don't even start to listen to until their late 20s or early 30s, or sometimes their 40s, right? I've known a lot of people go do PhDs in their late 40s and early 50s. And you know, reminding young men and sort of teaching them and telling them stories that help them listen to this early is like, man, that's gold.
That's it. Yeah.
That's gold. Yeah. So I also wanted to ask you, you know, are you at a place in the organization with Ever Forward where you still do get to work with young men and you get to like do the work that you love?
Yeah, ironically, I do more of that work, you know, than probably the stuff on my desk. If you can see this desk, which I'm not going to show you, like there's a lot of stuff here. But that is where I got to get the fire from, you know, like the running the organization is so critical and important, but I didn't start it for that reason. I didn't start it to be like, let me put my name and part of running an organization. I was a teacher who started a program at lunchtime, helping kids find their voice. So, I think what I do right now, I'm the executive director, but I'm also the program director. And when I just did a workshop last week, I mean, a group of young men, you know, our workshop now looks, so this is our first one, actually our second one live since the pandemic, right? These are masks that young men made in a workshop. They're now on cards, you know, if I can see. Like awesome. They're now on cards. This one's hard to read. So on the front, athlete. You see, the second one I can't even read, but the last one says, the last one says it's hard to read. Anime. And then the anime. And then this one is, these are all young men. Body image.
Yeah. Not athletic. Smart.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And this is, you know, over and over again, the same stuff, right? The same, I'll find one that's just easy to read. So, like this one, like.
On the outside, joy, care, energy. On the inside, alone, helpless, emotional.
Yeah. And over and over, when we give them a space that they can talk about it, where they can recognize they're not alone, that's where we find the, like, but where, even as men, right? Even as men, as adults, right? Like, I didn't have a place to talk about that when I was a teenager. And it wasn't until even in my own life, 2010, 11 years ago, when I found the own place in my own life to talk about what I was going through in my own life. Like, I probably cried more in the last 10 years since I've joined my own men's team than I have the first 30 plus years of my life. Why? Well, because I was taught men don't cry, first of all. You don't have room. There's no emotions. Suck it up. Just deal with it. And until I gave myself room to say, well, there's many layers to me. Yes, I can be the mask of get it together, focused, hard work. But there's also a part of me that feels other stuff. And imagine if I don't have a place to show them, what is going to happen? What we see in our young men, it piles up. Mm-hmm. I think there's a book called Mark Brackett called Permission to Feel. It talks about, says, if you don't deal with the emotion, you repress them, it's going to pile up like a debt that will eventually come due. Mm-hmm. And so I do the work with the young men all the time. And I'll show you this last one, young man, 17 years old, who wrote this one. This is him.
Outside family. Trusted or something, honest, and then on the inside, insecure, anxiety, fear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what we know is the more we can give young people a space to recognize they're not alone. And when they see the other masks, when they get to see other young men's masks, they realize, wait a minute, somebody in this room is going through that? Uh-huh. How is that possible? Yeah. Everybody here is perfect. Right? Because all we see is everybody's highlight reel, usually.
Yep.
We see their best wear, their best gear, their best outward appearance, their best profile, and we get sucked in comparing ourselves to the profile, the highlight reel, comparing it to our behind-the-scenes story.
Yep.
And then what happens?
That's the classic.
Comparison is a thief of all happiness, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was doing a session with a coaching client this morning, 38-year-old man, and he was like, Ben, can you tell me what the benefit of feeling my emotions would be? Because like I straight up don't see the point. I don't see the value. I'm a, I'm an emotional guy. I got nothing wrong with emotions, but I don't see the point in feeling them. And I was like, well, I think you got something wrong with emotions. I think you're suffering from the story that so many of us men suffer from. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, I said to him, like, emotions are the only, like, what is the nature of an emotion? I mean, what is it supposed to do? What are you supposed to do with it? And your story that you've received from your father probably and your society and your school is stuff them. You know, that's what you're supposed to do with them. But like, if you understand nature and the fact that everything has a purpose, yeah. You know, at a very basic level, emotions are meant to be felt. And yet we deny that. We deny ourselves that. And then from a social evolutionary perspective, our emotions are meant to bring us together. They're meant to be felt and be witnessed, you know? So I painted a picture of him sharing his grief of losing his father with a group of men, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's telling me like, hey, like I lost my dad 3 years ago and it hasn't got better. Nothing's better. You know, like my feelings around it are the same. And I'm stuck with it. And I was like, you got to feel them, man. You got to feel those feelings and you got to be witnessed. Yeah. You got to be witnessed. Because right now he's like, if there's death in a TV show, he's like, I'm out of the room. He leaves the room. Right? I was like, you're running from your emotions. And like, you just got to turn around and face them, man. Yeah. And, you know, so we got to teach each other how to be emotionally literate.
And I think one of the things I've learned about emotions in my own work is that, you know, most people in their minds, or maybe what they've been taught, is that we should just be happy all the time.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, you think about all the emotions, there's a mixture of, there's positive emotions, and there's not so positive, or pleasant emotions and not so pleasant. But if we're willing to say, we're only willing to show the pleasant emotions, here's what I know with young men, even teenagers, but some men do it also. They think anger is not an emotion. So the fact that they're always angry,
right?
They don't think they're emotional. Uh-huh. You're just stifled in what your emotional vocabulary is. So you think you're not emotional, but you're very emotional because you're always pissed off.
Yeah.
Right? Either you're funny or you're angry. I tell young men, look, mm-hmm. some of you got a hammer and a tickler. That's all you got. You got a hammer. If something you don't like it, you hammer it. If something you want to make funny, you laugh about it. And there, where's the middle? You're trying to figure out, well, this is, I'm not feeling funny. I'm not feeling, well, then you got to be angry, I guess. Because if it's not something funny, then I guess you got to be angry. I'm like, wait, you go from those two extremes? Like, there's no just being okay. Just like, I'm just good. And I tell young men, look, for a man who only has a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Uh-huh. So from some of you, our young men in our work, is like some men that I know too. Everything you're hammering everything, mm-hmm. like that needed a little bit of sandpaper. You went to the teacher. You just needed to ask a little question, get some help. You went in there with a hammer, hammering stuff, and now you can't even go back to the class anymore.
Yeah,
you need a screwdriver. Tighten that little situation up. You went in, bam, 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 like bam, bam, banging stuff around, thinking it was gonna solve it, and you made it worse, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're trying to help them see, and I for my own self too. Not only for just the young men, for me. There's a book. I don't know the name of the book, but it's about conscious leadership, and it talks about one of the principles says, "I will feel my feelings through to completion." It's a principle that you take in this book, a principle or some kind of something. It's just a thing. I will feel my feelings through to completion. And that's what it looks like when you're doing conscious leadership. When you're not, it's like, I'm going to pretend like I'm not feeling this. I'm going to act like it doesn't matter. And what's going to end up happening is going to come spilling out in the sideways. It's going to come passive aggressive.
Yep.
It's going to be darted to the wrong people. Come and bring it home because I didn't deal with it with the people who I needed to deal it with. And we see it come back all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, I love what you're saying. The anger tends to be the default for a lot of guys. And a lot of guys don't know what's on the other side of that anger, you know? And if they do, they're hiding it, you know? Yeah. And one of the things that I've seen done over and over and over again in men's work, in men's groups, in young men's groups, something that you see in this documentary called The Work, which I know you've seen, is you take men who are tough in that film. You know, I had Eldra Jackson on the podcast a few episodes ago. You take men who are super rugged and tough, and you have them bring their anger up, and you tell them to pop. You like, let it go, buddy, pop, and push into these men here. And you have the men lean into him and hold him back. Mm. And he pushes and pushes and pushes. And he pushes until he can't go anymore. And then you stand him up and you look him in the eye and you say, what are you feeling now? Mm. And he starts crying. He starts bawling. And there's all this sadness and, you know, grief on the other side of that anger. Mm. And you realize that anger was just the front. It was just the thing in between, in between that sadness and the world. And that's the classic case. That's the classic case for men. And because we don't generally teach each other that way of understanding anger, that way of pushing through anger, we don't know how to hold space for each other to be like, oh, you angry, man? Okay. Bring that anger to me. Like, push into me, you know, like let's feel that anger for a minute and then stop and take some conscious breaths together and then say like, okay, now what are you feeling? What are you feeling on the other side of that anger? And like actually receive a man's tears. Yeah. We don't do that. Yeah. So no, you know, generally you don't learn that until you go into one of these containers that's like the minority in the world, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, another interesting side note is I've noticed that actually for women, it tends to be the opposite. You know, being in therapeutic context with women, you get them stressed, you bring up some of their pain and they cry like that. They start crying. That's their defense. Mm-hmm. And when you start to prod further, you're like, what's behind that? What's behind these tears? Like, are you angry? And they're like, oh yeah, I'm angry. When have you showed that anger? Oh, like never. Right. And so then we start conjuring that anger and bring that up. And and it's the thing that you have to work hard to get to with women a lot of the time is that anger. Mm. But I noticed that, you know, not all women may relate to that. They may relate to like the more masculine, the male way of being with it. But that's just tends to be how it is. One is hiding the other.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we need to understand that. We need to learn how to like see through our own shit, you know, and get to the other side and to hold space for each other.
And it starts young. I mean, I started young. Yeah. I was a vice principal at a middle school, 11-year-old, 12-year-old boy, gets a referral to the office. Referral says, he threw a chair, almost hit me. This is from the teacher. And he comes in. He's like, oh, I'm mad. You know, we never hand the student the referral because most referrals would get torn up. So the student walker brings him to the office. He's like clenching his fists. He's all mad. And I'm like, okay, it says you're mad here, but why are you so mad? Like, you says you threw the chair. Man, it ain't my fault, man. She and I was like, okay. Tell me what happened. What's going on? Tell me what happened. Man, and he's like pumping the fist. And on the anger is coming out because he's now upset, right? He got to this emotional place of like raging. And because a teacher put a student next to him that he had told the teacher he can't sit by. Because this student was like bullying him, harassing him, bothering him, but he told the teacher couldn't sit next to him. So the teacher puts this kid right next to him because she forgot or didn't care, but one of the two. The kid started saying something to him. He started getting mad, and he was like, "You better stop talking to me. Stop talking to me." Uh-huh. And then he loses it, throws the chair. Has nothing to do with the teacher.
Yeah,
has nothing to do with the teacher at all, except the teacher forgot and put this kid next to him. But nonetheless, he comes to my office and the teacher wants him in trouble. And my job is to like first find out what's going on. So what is he saying to you? He's talking about my hairline. He's making fun of him, right? Uh-huh. So you're feeling sad and embarrassed and like treated poorly. But only thing you can show, you can't cry. Like in our community, you can't show tears unless you want people to pick on you more. You can't be like, but if you throw a chair, or you're going to get people's attention. It may make you get kicked out of class, but you're clear that you ain't, you taking something, that something is happening.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that happens so often. And that one example for that little 12-year-old boy happens to men all over, right? We're dealing with stuff. We're bottling it up. We don't get to talk about sadness and fear and worry, embarrassed and feeling shame and feeling insignificant or whatever. We can talk about I'm pissed off, right? Mm-hmm. And we see it happen so often that anger takes over and they call it amygdala hijack or hijack yep. something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? It hijacks you. You then look up 5 seconds later, you would have done something very different, but you were out of your mind for a second. Mm-hmm. And we got to help young men learn. And men, I mean, if we can help the young men learn, they're going to learn it better and they're going to help their young men learn it. But I think if we don't help them learn it, start now. Like, okay, what's happening? Where are you at in your body? Like, yeah. I'm really in, like, what's happening?
Yes. Yeah. Like, man, I'm just imagining what it would be like for you to have like a stack of pillows in your office. I don't know if you have this, but like if you had a stack of pillows in your office and a guy comes in like that and you're like, what are you feeling? I'm feeling pissed off. Okay, cool. Feel that for a minute. Let's feel that right now. Grab those pillows. I want you to grab those pillows, shove them in your face, and I want you to scream at least 10 times as hard as you can. Like, really, like, kill those pillows. Like, gah! You know, like, really feel those feelings. Yeah. And I'm just going to sit right here with you, you know, and let a guy do that. And then get to the other side and say, how are you feeling now? Oh, I'm feeling better, but I'm feeling sad. Okay, here's a box of Kleenex. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit here with you while you feel that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's essentially that's what you're doing, right? You're sitting there with them and you're like, I'm going to hold space. What's up, man?
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
So tell me about your men's team. So you found, what is this men's team? Where did you find it? And what have you seen as the value of having a team of guys?
Yeah. So my story of men's work started in 2010. I did a weekend called the Sterling Men's Weekend. Uh-huh. My men's team is called MDI, Men's Division International. The way it works is to join the team, you have to do one of these initiation weekends. And, you know, this is from the men's work from the 80s, right? A lot of men's work, you know, Robert Bly and the, you know, all these guys who were the Minnesota Men's Project, all these projects that were men coming together. But since then, I just want to speak to, like, I've done lots of different weekends. I did, you know, the Mankind Project weekend. I did Every Man. I did just recently.
Sacred Sons.
Sacred
right?
Sons.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was, that was this new phase, right? I did Every Man right before the pandemic, February of last year, literally right before. I'm so glad because I don't know how I would have handled the pandemic if I had to carry it into the pandemic, all that stuff I needed to let out. And Sacred Sons just a month ago. But my team, you know, I've been there for 11 years now. You know, sometimes I am there to support the men and sometimes they're there to support me. It's always it's mission driven to like help men, you know? And I think that one of the things I've learned was that, and I keep learning, I am by default and not by choice sometimes, I'm a lone wolf, right? Not that I think I can do it by myself or even that I want to do it by myself, but to overcome asking for help seems like a little bit harder than just trying to do it by myself and not bother people, uh-huh. right? Because growing up, there was nobody to bother. I was the oldest. I was in charge of everything. Who do you go ask for help? Nobody. You just do it. You do it. You keep working until you get it done. And I'm learning now in my gray age, like, Shanti, it's not working. Yeah. It's not working. like you know what I'm saying? Like, the dreams you have, you can't, they're bigger than you. So therefore, the reason that you keep hitting walls, and it was like this momentum yesterday of like, I keep hitting these walls, you know why? Because I'm not asking for help until I get to the place at the end. Like, we have an event this weekend that I am stuck on, right? And I didn't ask for help early enough. I was making progress. I'm working hard every day. I'm working many hours every day, but I'm working alone. And it's like, okay, when are you going to learn this lesson? You keep learning this lesson. You keep having to keep learning this lesson. And I think I'm finally starting to learn it and put it into action, even though I'm still kind of bad at it. Mm-hmm. So my men's team is, they know me. They know, hey, isn't this like 24-hour relay time? This is our annual event. And like, yeah, it's like, you should be coming to the meeting every week with some stuff about the relay. I'm like, oh yeah, I should. Right? And I'm like, I mean, it's like, but that's when men know you and they hear you and they see you. And they want you to win. I didn't grow up with men in my life who were like, we want you to win. We want you to like come to the circle, share your successes, and we want to celebrate your wins. Like, I wasn't around that kind of behavior. It was like, keep it to yourself. Don't talk about it. Don't brag. Don't boast. Just.
Yeah.
But to be around men who's like, let's celebrate some wins. What was your win this week? Right? I mean, that becomes, and when that work is when I start doing with the young men, giving them space to like win.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no matter how small, let's celebrate a win this week, because we can always celebrate things that went wrong. But how about we begin infusing celebrating things that went right? So then when the next thing goes right, we recognize that that is a win too. And so I think it's just, it's in the work. So that's been my personal work. And I've been 10 years. When I started Ever Forward in 2004, I didn't join my men's team until 2010. Mm-hmm. When I went to my first men's circle, I'm like, this is what I've been trying to build.
Right.
This,
yeah.
I was building what I needed all along. Uh-huh. I didn't even know it existed. No one had ever invited me in my whole life to a men's circle, ever. I'm like, what? And when I went to that first circle, I'm like, this is what Ever Forward is. Yeah. This is what I'm building. Oh my God. I intuitively knew there needs to be a space for men to do it. I just didn't have it. And when I found the circle of men, it changed my life.
It changes your life. It changes. I can't tell you how many times I've heard this story. And it happens every time I see that space created for men. Like I came down to Oregon for the Eclipse Festival 3 years ago or whatever. And there's like 50,000 people in this, like, it was mayhem. But in the camp that I was in, on the first day first official day of the festival, I gathered all the men in a tent and in like one of these big tents, and we did a sharing circle. And I sort of held some of the space like I do with the men's community here back home. And every guy that was there said that was the best part of his weekend. You know, despite the music and the like psychedelics and this amazing like lake that we had and the eclipse, you know, they're like, that's the best part of my weekend, man. That there was something so like primal and natural to that my whole self was just like, yes, you know, like there's something special that happens when men who have an intention of like being conscious come together in a structured format, you know? And, you know, one of the pieces that you were sharing was basically appreciation and recognition. That's huge. Like, I think as young men and as boys, we learn not to compliment each other, you know, because it gets interpreted as a sexual advance or weakness, right? Yeah. It's interpreted as weakness, right? So we can't say like, hey, man, I like you. I genuinely like you. You know, that's not cool. You can't do that.
That's right.
And so that part of us just atrophies. It falls apart. And therefore, the piece where we're being seen by our peers and being appreciated also, it falls into disrepair, you know, atrophies. And this piece, like when we're sitting in group and we do an exercise where we're like, okay, everybody just like look around the circle here, and one at a time, like I want you to pick somebody out and say and tell them something you like about them. You know, Ashanti, I like how you look me in the eye and how you smile. And like, I feel your love through how you speak and how you talk. Like, I feel your heart, right? How that energy bounces around the room. And 10 minutes later, it's like magic. Magic just happened. Like, this crazy amount of bonding, this tightening of the squad. It's beautiful. And it's like this gift that we can give to each other that we should have learned all along. But somehow it's only happening so much in these sort of sacred circles, right?
And even what you just said, that's a beautiful. I'm glad you talked about the complimenting each other, because there was a researcher. Her name is PJ. I don't know her last name. She did a search in the height of this no homo phase that was around the world. If you look at hashtag no homo on Twitter, you will see thousands of posts. But you know what is actually happening in those posts? That men are being authentic and caring about each other. They're saying no homo in a way that is like to tell people I'm not gay. But what they're doing in order to give you a compliment on your shoes, in order to compliment your hair, I need to put that phrase so it qualifies me to not be gay. And I don't appreciate that. But I mean, as a teacher, I used to have to address it all the time. But what I recognized, what in through her research, she talked about most of the comments people are saying are actually caring, loving conversations. Although they, in their mind, think I better pretend, I better make sure people don't think that something's wrong with me. But not this. Well, see, I'm saying it in a way.
But that's what they're thinking. Yeah.
That's what they're thinking. Like, I want to make sure I protect my image.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say this phrase in order to make sure people don't, like, say that it's something that I'm different, right?
Yep.
And I think that was, I hadn't thought about it in that way. I just don't tolerate the term, but also saying, why are you saying that? Like, why can't you just give them a compliment and be done with it?
Yeah.
Right? Why do you need to, like, add some extra comments that are really, you know, not that are negative, right? And in their mind, they're doing something positive. And so it becomes this conflict of, like, well, what do I want to say it, but I don't want people to, like, call me a name. So, anyway, when I heard that research, I was like, wow, like, how amazing, and how it makes so much sense.
It does.
How it makes so much sense. And I wish that we gave men and boys a space to be able to do that without having to qualify that I'm not trying to be attracted to you in any way besides a brotherly or care as a human to human. And I think that so much happens. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, on a hopeful note, I think what you're describing and what she was illuminating is sort of the breakout phase where young men are learning that they can speak an emotional language or they can compliment each other. It's just in that breakout phase, they had to, like, cover it up. Like, hey, you know, I'm not trying to be weird or anything, but I like your shoes, right? And that's the beginning of something that I'm seeing. I don't know what you're seeing, but, like, around here, I'm in Vancouver, so there's, like, it's upper class and there's less crime, there's less, like, fear on the streets. Like, you know, I think young folks are more comfortable, you know, where they are. But what we see, like, I got a little white dog. And we walk the dog with my wife down this fairly busy pedestrian street. And you see groups of young boys, groups of young men, you know, you see like, you know, 14, 15, 16 year old guys walking together. And they're like, oh, that dog's so cute. You know, and I'm like, and we're always so, like, blown away. Like, these guys are their hearts are open enough that they're like, oh, hey, little buddy, you know, and they laugh when Bodie runs past them. And for me, when I was that age, that wasn't happening. You know, there was not, I didn't have that sort of openness. My heart was not open like that. And we see them the way they're talking to each other and they're sort of, you know, they're sort of warm with each other.
Yeah.
And I coach young men and I hear their language and they can give the language of appreciation. And I'm like, oh, this next generation is a little bit more emotionally intelligent than my generation was. They definitely are. Yeah. And they're definitely way more open to sexuality differences, right? There's, you know, when I was a kid, it was like, it was the worst insult to be called gay, right? But I think more and more young men and young women are exploring their sexuality with more of an open mind and with less stigma, you know? So I feel like some of the work that we're doing at a societal level is working and that it's filtering down and that the next generation's coming up to something a little bit better.
Yeah.
And the
pressure, and I would say yes, we see that as well. Like, a lot more openness, and those pressures are still super embedded. And I think what I also see, and lots of examples, but what I see is this opportunity for us to say, because we have some, like, for parents who don't tolerate that kind of thing, when it lands in their home, where their child doesn't identify maybe in the body that they were born in, it becomes really challenging. And those kids sometimes ends up finding themselves homeless or out on the streets or have to, like, you know, pretend until they get to a place where they can, are not, you know, dependent on the income or family support, and when they can be off on their own. But we just see so many different things happening. And I think that, you know, we live in a world where I get to tell you how you should be.
Uh-huh.
And I get to tell you, and I think you should listen to my opinion about how you should be and who you are, as opposed to, why does it matter to you?
Yeah.
Why is it important to you? Like, why? How do we get to a place where everyone gets to decide how other people should live? I mean, if it's not impeding on your well-being or anything, or I can make it feel like it impedes on my well-being. Uh-huh. It makes me uncomfortable. Like, oh, so now, so I think that so much it happens in that way of us recognizing that the young people are going to lead the future, and they know it. It's not like cliche anymore. Like they're saying, look, old people, y'all had all this time to fix it up. Y'all still can't get it right. We're going to take over. And this is how it's going. Because the world is in this device.
Yeah.
And I know a whole many adults have no idea how to use these devices, which is why they're going to be left behind, right? Yeah. And I think what the young people are saying is, we got this. We'll take care of it. And it's what we're seeing, right? We're seeing young people taking the leadership, young people building their own companies, young people starting movements, because they're not waiting for us to do it anymore. And so how about we help them to create more of the world that we could have lived in if we had the courage to do it at their age, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to work. That's what we're working towards.
Holy shit, man. We need to let go. We need to let go of how we think the next generation needs to live, because we can't wait for every third generation to make a leap in our progress societally, you know? Like we need to let go, and we need to respect what the changes that are occurring. We need to respect each other's decisions, and you know, man, what you were saying about gender and sexual proclivity, you know, like whichever way you want to lean, you know, and how we really need to, you know, we like to make it a problem, but it's not really a problem. I don't want to sidetrack too hard, but like we need to do that around the vaccine thing, right? With COVID, like I have not seen people tell other people what they should do more than I'm seeing right now. It's like it's everyone's business whether you're getting vaccinated or not, and they're going to get on your back about it and tell you why it's important that you do it. And meanwhile, it's a thing that you're putting in your body, you know? Like why can't we just make a decision for ourselves and respect other people's decisions? You know, it's because we're all running around scared. You know, I know in the U.S. it's better, because I have a lot of friends in the U.S. and I've checked in with them about this. And, you know, the U.S. has like a large chunk of people who are not getting vaccinated, and a lot of people are just, you know, respecting that. But man, in Canada, it's off the hook up here, man. People really want to tell you what you should and shouldn't do to protect yourself from the big bad COVID. And it's to me, it's the same thing. I mean, I understand we're dealing with an infectious disease, but there is it's almost like this situation is a test of how willing we are to let go of our judgments of other people and to respect each other and to make friends in a time where we're all in this together. You know, what does we're all in this together mean? It doesn't mean there's the good people over here and the bad people over here who are making the problem worse. It means we should be making friends right now. We should not be letting fear run the show. We should be letting love run the show. This is very hard. It's a very hard time.
I mean, that topic is a rich one, and is deep one. And I'll say it like this part. We have a world now today that everybody believes their opinion is what should matter. Uh-huh. And here's what I know. When I grew up, like, if you want to go to kindergarten, you better have your vaccinations. Like, you're not going to go to a school unless you come to the school and you've done the thing. I mean, I didn't know this until I was an adult, but I knew.
Right.
Now I know this, you know, working with other parents.
Yeah.
That yellow card, you need to better bring it, and it better have the right stamps, because if you don't, your child's not getting checked in. That's just the way it works. Mm-hmm. It's just so part of it is that we're giving a lot more people room to decide.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. I mean, there's some things we still haven't given people room to decide. If I want to get a passport, I better come in with that yellow card with all the information on it, knowing that I've done what I needed to do. Otherwise, I'm not getting a passport.
Yeah.
So who knows what's going to come in next? I'm not really worried about it. I know in July of last year, I had COVID. I know when the vaccine was available to me, I was like, give it to me, because I know there's nothing worse that I've ever experienced in my life than being on the floor and on the couch and on the bed for 3 weeks, like thinking super I was sick. I'm clear for my own self. I don't care what anybody else does about their own self.
Yeah.
But I'm like, hey, don't be trying to shake my hand. Don't be trying to hug me. Don't be like, let's be clear. Like, let's respect each other's space.
Yes.
I need to protect my well-being and my health. And I'm gonna, when I'm going outside, I'm gonna have my mask on. And you can, and I'm not gonna listen to anybody telling me what they think I should do or not.
Yeah.
But I tell people, you know, I got cool masks. You know what I'm saying? Like this is one of my my Lucha Libre masks.
So, oh yeah.
So I don't worry about it. But ultimately, I'm saying I don't need to listen to you, and your opinion actually doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
So thank you for your opinion. I didn't ask. And second of all, I don't really care.
Yeah.
Do what you do. Do you.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna do me, and I'm gonna make sure that I, for the vision and dreams I have in my life, I need to be alive to do them. And I'm gonna do what I need to do to stay in that way. So yeah, I know. Yeah, it's rich, it's deep, it's powerful. And you know, like I get why some people have their feelings they have. And also I'm like, you know, at some point we as a world, as a society, are gonna make some decisions. And we know there's more things down the pike that we can only imagine, right?
Yeah.
That we haven't seen yet. So
yeah. I love what you said. I respect how you see things, and I respect the decisions that you make to take care of yourself. And I feel like I can be close to you with that opinion, right? And if I'm more of a Democrat and you're more of a Republican, I still feel like I can be close to you, you know, even though we might disagree on the reality of things or the origin of things or how things should be in society, you know?
Yeah.
And that lesson, I feel like is what we all need the most right now. Is like, how do we be together? How do we care about each other, even if we disagree on something, or even if we see things a little bit differently? Because
That's right. The
truth is, like, what really matters between us, between humans, is like the love and the recognition and the appreciation, right? And just giving each other space, right? Yeah.
But imagine that part. We have the recognition and the ability to see things differently.
Yeah.
But the way the world is designed now, when I open this, I only see the stuff I really want to see.
Yeah.
I have no practice. We are out of practice of hearing a differing opinion of thought, because what I follow is what I follow.
Yeah.
And what's in my algorithm is with my algorithm. And I just hear more of what I really want to hear.
Yeah.
And therefore, when I hear somebody who says something different, it's so foreign to me, because I'm only curating my own news cycles.
Uh-huh.
Whether it's Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, what I follow is what I get, and I get more of what I want. Hmm. And that is dangerous, I believe, to our, as much as I love my phone, I think that part of our young people and adults who are out of practice being able to hear. So when you say something that doesn't match what I already believe, I don't want to hear you.
Yeah.
And therefore we become to where we can't tolerate somebody who's different than us, because we've never even had practice even navigating just different difference of opinion.
Yes.
And it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, it's only going to get worse. Like
because these are getting smarter.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like one of the best things you can do in real life is seek out people who are on a opposite spectrum from you in some manner. You know, for me, like meeting a Trump supporter, you know, I'm in Canada, but everybody chooses a side. And for me, meeting a Trump supporter is very infrequent. But I have some friends who were supportive of that side. That I have some men in my men's team, in my men's circle, who are there. And the practice of listening to each other and having perhaps some friendly banter, but coming back to love with one another, I feel like is very nourishing. It's exactly what we need right now, you know? So going back to the men's circle piece, I almost wanted to just like close out on that piece, because I think it's personally my biggest mission right now is to advocate for men to have a team, like you're saying. You know, they call it a men's team in Sterling, and in the Samurai Brotherhood, we call it a squad, a men's squad.
Nice.
And we've got 50 squads right now in the Brotherhood. And, you know, guys need a space where they can train, and they can do this training. They can learn to speak this language, the language of emotional intelligence and understanding yourself and understanding what's behind your anger and your own mask. What's your mask look like on the inside and on the outside, and sharing that with other guys and learning how to challenge each other in like a healthy way that doesn't feel like, you know, like you're being hurt by the person, real good, healthy, like, hey, I'm going to hold you accountable to this, but there also on the other side, that love and appreciation, that recognition, that medicine that we've like never really received from other, young guys.
Yeah.
All for the purpose of passing it down to that next generation, you know, because we gotta learn it if we want to pass it down.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. That's right.
So you know it.
Yeah.
And you're passing it down. You've been passing it down for, you know, almost two decades, and you've influenced so many young men, you know. So I really appreciate the work that you do, man, and that you're out there. You got a podcast, right?
Yeah, it's called Taking Off the Mask, and we just come together with men and young men. Our last episode was a 17-year-old young man. He's a sophomore in high school. We're in a young phase because they're graduating and they're moving up ages. So we're got some young people, but yeah, all ages, and men have a space to take off. We do the mask. We both cool. make a mask. We talk about the mask. And it's really a space to do that work. And so I want more people to recognize that men feel too. Mm-hmm. We may have been taught we can't and can't show it, but I want to make a space for men so that they can, young men, old men, all ages, to say, man, you know what? There's more to me than what you can see.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's more to me. And so that's what we're trying to do. And the Million Mask Movement, which is where this all kind of came from, this movement that we created, is giving people around the world. So the campaign is for everyone. I mean, and people can make a mask. If you go to 100kmasks.com, they can make a mask. It's a website. They can draw a mask, write their words, and they can see masks from all over the world of, like, just recognize that they're not alone, you know?
Amazing, man.
Yeah, and I want to learn more about the Summer of Our Brotherhood, so I'm glad you showed me the shirt. I wrote it down, so I'm going to follow back up with you.
Great,
to get some more info.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk. Yeah, we're involved with we've gotten involved with these guys who do young men's initiation work in, you know, this in Vancouver here, called the Young Men's Adventure Weekend.
And Brad Leslie.
Brad Leslie. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I came to one.
Yeah, I wasn't there, but yeah, we will meet, sir, because yeah, I know Brad well. I interviewed him on the show. Folks, if you haven't heard the interview with Brad, look for that episode in the show notes. We'll put Brad's episode in the show notes. But Brad told me about the Young Men's Ultimate Weekend, which was covered on a CNN episode with Lisa Ling.
Yeah,
last year or earlier this year. And you're involved with those guys, and that's down in the Santa Cruz area, right? And this is like
Northern California, like, you know, California's so long, right? But Northern, yeah.
Yeah. And this is like a full weekend for young men, and it's just young men and men running these young guys through a series of difficult challenges and emotional challenges, physical challenges, and having to face sides of themselves that they haven't seen before, and it's essentially like an initiation style weekend for young guys, and all these guys running the show are on men's teams and men's groups like you and like me, and we're passing it down, you know. So I want people to know about that and know that that's happening, and you know, my hope is that you know, a decade from now, there's like, that shit's just happening everywhere. It's happening all over the place, right?
That's right.
So, yeah, thank you for doing that work, man.
Man, thank you. Thanks for having me. So good to meet you officially. And I'm excited. I'm glad that there are more men, good men out here trying to do this work, because we need it. Our future needs it. Our planet needs it. Our world needs it. Our hearts need it.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you, brother. So people have got the Ever Forward Club. And then are you on Instagram?
I am on Instagram at Ever Forward Club, and then mine is Branch Speaks.
Great. Branch Speaks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Branch Speaks, for coming on the show, man. It was really great to meet you.
Thank you, Ben. So I appreciate you, man. Thank you. Glad we made this happen.
All the best.